We'll begin in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. For the week beginning June 16th, 2006, this is the Rain Report, available as a downloadable MP3 file from www.arnewsline.org and for the first time at its new website at www.therainreport.com. I'm Chris Peterson, KG0BP. This week, we conclude a presentation given on the current status of broadband over power lines, or BPL, technology, given at the Dayton Hamvention last month. Our speaker is ARRL Lab Manager Ed Hare, W1RFI.
These present rules can work for some devices. It's working for this computer. It's working for those lights. Because of the things I talked about earlier, most devices don't operate the same way BPL does. They don't emit all the time. They don't emit over a large geographical area. And so BPL is going to be different. It's broadband. It covers tens of megahertz of spectrum completely. If I tuned up and down the bands, I would have heard that completely fill the band. It emits all the time. It's built as big as an entire state. So it does have a significantly different interference potential. To resolve that requires a sound engineering approach that considers this. Now, the other thing I've run into in industry is amateur radio is a dying breed. We don't have to worry about it. Now, although the service has taken a small dip in recent years, partly influenced, I think, by the transition back to the 10-year expiration as some of those 10-year licensees started expiring, over the years, it's been a steady growth rate. And if the FCC changes regarding Morse code testing take place, I expect we're going to see an influx of new hams, and we're going to see an influx of new hams operating on HF. So anybody in the industry who's counting on amateur radio going away is probably missing a boat. Well, nobody cares about ham radio anymore anyway. We have the internet. Well, Representative Steve Israel, serving in our federal government legislature, has come up with a good web page that outlines why he believes amateur radio is important. This is a quote from the page. Amateur radio provides a vital public safety communication service to the public at no cost. NTIA has come up with a description of the amateur radio service that's very positive. It outlines the important MCOM work we do. It's a part of our value to society. Well, don't worry about it, because BPL users will outnumber amateur radio operators, so we'll be given priority. Well, no, under the rules, the licensed users are protected. In my opinion, it would be a major paradigm shift for the FCC to say, we're going to give unlicensed, unintentional emitters of noise precedence over a licensed service. I can't envision that happening. The FCC had every opportunity to do that at the last rulemaking. They did not. They were clear that licensed services need to be protected. When cable TV came along, they outnumbered us. That didn't happen. If we interfere with telephones, the FCC hasn't changed those rules. So in the long run, I think that the paradigm of licensed services having priority will take place. There are many, many, many users of spectrum. In reality, it's not an interference problem only for amateur radio. We're the experienced users. We're the ones located in close proximity to these systems. We know interference. We know how to complain. And one thing I've noted is I think some in the industry expect that if they wait it out, amateur radio operators will stop complaining. We still have hams complaining about incentive licensing, so I think that that's an unrealistic expectation. Well, BPL in reality can interfere with a number of services. I've been in areas, and some of the guys who've done BPL work locally have seen shortwave broadcasts get creamed. I've seen 30 to 50 megahertz get creamed, S9 level signals, and so a lot of these other groups, we're trying to work with them to provide them information, but they need to speak for themselves. ARRL represents amateur radio. We cannot and should not try to protect shortwave directly, try to speak for public safety users, because if we do, the BPL industry is going to say, well, these users aren't complaining. Public safety doesn't see a problem. Shortwave broadcasters don't see a problem. ARRL is saying that there is one for them. Obviously, that would undermine our credibility. If they speak for themselves, we'll certainly support that, but we're trying to get some of those people to better understand what they need to do. Well, one of the things I see is, as the industry addresses problem for amateur radio, that is a recognition that this needs to be addressed. Some of these other users may start asking, what about me? 30 to 50 megahertz has been very much at risk in a number of these systems. I think the public safety users should be out there taking a look. Other agencies do consider our concerns, and some of these have been filed as comments in the rulemaking. Of course, when the rulemaking came along, ARRL provided substantial information. What we did is we used VOACAP, a well-known propagation program, to model what HF does. And we took 100 watts to a Yagi, 14 megahertz in the daytime, and lo and behold, VOACAP predicted that 14 megahertz is a worldwide band at amateur power levels. Well, we're not surprised. Of course it is. I used in that program the typical average median values of man-made noise. In other words, the noise that we're out there experiencing right now, and of course, even with the present noise levels, and noise happens, we can communicate worldwide. I then added 10 dB to the noise level. And as you can see, we went from a worldwide band to one of a little bit more regional coverage. How many people here would consider a 10 dB or about a dB and a half increase in noise level to harm the type of amateur operating you're doing right now? Okay, those guys who get on 75 meters exchanging 40 dB over reports could probably suffer 10 dB just fine. I then programmed in the Part 15 legal limit noise levels, and we went from a worldwide band to one of extremely limited coverage that it would have been horribly noisy, not able to be used, exactly similar to what you heard on the audio clips I deployed. So this is what we have now. This is what 20 meters would be like in the daytime if BPL were operating at the legal limits in the amateur bands. Well, one of the problems we've run into with all sorts of interference is, well, we hear noise, is it BPL, what is it? And yes, it is possible to misidentify BPL. As you heard a little bit on the tapes, each type of BPL has a unique sound. Some are, the older ones are spread spectrum, some are OFDM, orthogonal frequency division multiplexing, where they put the signal spread out over a lot of carriers. And BPL has certain characteristics. As you're tuning the bands, it occupies spectrum. So I'd be tuning up and I'd get to 4 megahertz as an example, it suddenly gets loud and it stays loud until I get to 12 megahertz and then it drops off. That's the kind of thing you're going to hear with BPL. They have a unique sound. If you have something that's broadband with a strong buzz to it, it's probably regular power line noise. And I bring this up because it's important if we have interference of any type that it be correctly identified. Well, what's the league been doing on BPL? Some of you here have probably read absolutely every article that ARRL has ever published. A few of you may not have, so I'll run through this briefly. Here's the short list. Most important, I think we're working with local BPL teams. We've been filing supporting complaints to their interference complaints. We've been doing measurements in BPL areas as we can, although I'm trying to get the teams geared up to do it directly. There's a petition for recon in the work. We are ultimately looking at possible federal court action. If this doesn't go our way, there were many, many things done during that proceeding that the FCC did not do correctly. We're maintaining contact with industry. We've been working an awful lot on this to try to help represent the interest of amateur radio. A lot more to be done, and I don't want to get this into great detail, but we're pushing forward. Now, one of the most important aspects of this, I think, has been cooperation. Over the years, amateur radio is not separate from the rest of the world. We're part of it. We're not separate from technology. We're leaders in a lot of ways in that technology, so we work closely with industry in a number of different ways. We've worked with the cable industry, the DSL industry, Home Phone Networking Alliance. We've even worked with HomePlug, the industry specification for in-premise BPL. Now, interestingly, Current Technologies right now is perhaps the most successful BPL company. They've installed HomePlug equipment in Cincinnati. There are 2 million HomePlug devices out there, and I have zero reports of interference because of the notches in the ham bands. To me, it's ironic that the most successful BPL company is building on work ARRL did with that industry 6 years ago before BPL was even considered as a viable technology. So, although we've worked with utilities, we've worked with different manufacturers, some very closely, others to varying degrees of cooperation, and even those who haven't cooperated, I'm leaving that door wide open. I don't want to look at the past. I don't want to look at mistakes. If a company who has not done things correctly wants our help to do it right to protect amateur radio, I'm not going to rub their noses. I'm going to sit there and I'm going to help them. As I said, my job in that sense is to help BPL be successful by helping address the interference issues. Those manufacturers that have worked with me understand that I'm sincere about that, I mean it, and we'll do what we can.
You're listening to a talk about the current status of broadband over power lines, or BPL, technology given last month by ARRL lab manager Ed Hare, W1RFI. We'll wrap up this second excerpt from Ed's talk in a moment. This is The Rain Report, now available as a podcast at its new website, The Rain Report.
.com Well, one of the things I've seen, and I gave this presentation on an IEEE group, is hams in the industry seem to see things a little differently. They say interference is rare. We say it'll be everywhere. BPL signals are very weak. They're very strong. Oh, you'll hear them for miles of power line. They're just a point source. And the list has gone on and on with some of the difficulties we've had communicating with the industry. Well, we know why. The other side is lying, and they're just looking to protect their own interests. Well, they say the same thing, so I'm not sure this is true. All of our beliefs are shaped by our perspective. BPL manufacturers want an environment where they can manufacture, sell products, and make money. Money isn't bad. We all enjoy the money we get, and I think it's pretty important. We want an environment where our radio systems will not be degraded by external factors. Utility engineers just want the stuff to work so they don't get fired for making the wrong decision. So everybody's perspectives are seeing this from a different point of view. One of them is an example. Receivers versus spectrum analyzers. I take a receiver to a BPL area. I have a real antenna. I hear plenty of noise. You take a spectrum analyzer with a little loop antenna with a minus 40 dBi gain, in other words, about the same as a Heathkit antenna, and you take that out, you're not going to hear the signals that are down near the noise floor that would bother us. Here's a presentation I did. This is a measurement I made along about 1,000 meters of road. This was done in Briarcliff Manor, New York, where we can see a pretty strong level of signal, about S9-ish or so, along the entire road for a great distance. So we say this is a line source. It's occurring all down the line. Make the same measurement with a spectrum analyzer, and what you say, no, there's just a little bit of noise that occurs right next to the coupler. They're looking at the noise of their analyzer with the strongest BPL signal sticking its head above it. This was the major error in some testing just done in Manassas, Virginia, where ARRL analyzed the report. Well, some of the BPL manufacturers are working closely with us. We recently, for example, DS2, one of the chipset manufacturers being used for most of the Generation 2 technology, came to the ARRL lab. They had modems in hand. They said, Ed, we have improved the notching of our modems. We want to test these modems. We tested them, and what we found is between the notching levels that they did, that got down about 40 dB, and some guard bands they had programmed into those, they're fully programmable, they have achieved about a 15 dB improvement in the performance of the notching, so the spectrum they want to protect will certainly be a lot better. Now, when I've gone to various BPL areas, in a mobile environment that's a little more noisy than you're going to see in some fixed stations, I'd measured about 15 dB of degradation within the notches. So by going from 25 to 40, they've given us that 15 dB. In my opinion, this is a major step forward. I've yet to see it deployed. I've yet to see them take the chipsets, put it into an integrated product, and then put it out in the world. But I think with this technology improvement, we certainly owe it to the industry that did that in response to what was, to me, an offhanded comment at a meeting like a year and a half ago. I said to Victor Dominguez of DS2, you know, you need another 15 dB, Victor, and if you get it to me, I'll be happy. He got it to me. So I think we need to take a close look at what that's going to do with it. This is some general information. I won't go over this in great detail. I'm going to put this presentation up on the presentation areas of our ARRL BPL page, ARRL.org/BPL. But this shows you the different technologies. They're all little different from Motorola that I described a little bit. Current technologies and IBEC, the other ones that have been successful, do not operate HF on the overhead lines. They're between 32 and 48. That's far enough from amateur spectrum. They're hasn't been a problem. They, too, are using home plug modems to get into homes and businesses. Now, although I think there'll be a problem from the ham next door, in Cincinnati, the reports back from those hams are that there are no major interference problems with that in Cincinnati. If the other manufacturers using the DS2 chipset duplicate that architecture, there's a very real potential that they, too, could do it right. So maybe we could help them solve the interference problem. Now, the other part of the interference problem is interference to BPL. Some of the tests that have been done have not been very encouraging. In one test done in Potomac, Maryland, we saw as little as 5 watts took the system down, stopped working. In other systems, the one I did that same test in Cincinnati, Ohio, 75 watts did not do the same thing. That was about a year and a half later. We don't know whether the installation was different. We don't know whether the product was changed. I've offered to work with current technologies to try to do some more scientific tests. I know one I did in Bowling Green, Ohio is kind of fun, is the guy up there, George Stossel, Decor Systems, he's now Whiskey 8 Golf Sierra. Yes, we've won him over to the dark side. And actually, he was always looking to do this right. He did not want to harm amateur radio. And so we went up there and we found a few problems when we worked together. other. So he dropped the power levels down. He could do that via a Wi-Fi link until I said, George, there's no interference. He said, great. I says, George, is your data rate still good? He says, oh, yeah, it's fine. And I reached over and I clicked the switch and he's in the back seat. Wait a minute. What happened? It just stopped working. I said, George, I just transmitted with 5 watts on 6 meters. His reaction was holy. Well, I don't remember exactly what he said was holy, but something was holy. We've done similar tests in, I think it was Miami, where the hams there, we turned on a carrier, and we sent a guy like 300 feet up the road. We had him turn on about 50 watts. Up at our end, all of a sudden, all the noise disappeared. The system went dead quiet. When he released the carrier, it came back with a vengeance for about 10 or 15 seconds, and then went back to its normal state. Clearly was trying to catch up with packets that had gotten missed. I was in one city in Connecticut where I turned on my carrier, and after 30 seconds of carrier, boom, system got quiet for about a minute. I could then hear modems negotiating with each other. It was kind of fun. And of course, we can laugh and chuckle, but in reality, interference to these systems will be a problem for us. Legally, we're fine. These things are not offered any protection from amateur radio, but you know, if I'm preventing my neighbor from downloading pictures of Britney, this is not a discussion I want to have. So, oh, and everybody said you can get Britney. I saw a couple guys in the front there, face lit right up. And there's a lot more testing needed. I'm working closely with a number of utilities. Anybody from the electric utility industry here? Come on, we won't hurt you. Okay, they're not, but a lot of cases there are. Well, this relationship is not adversarial. Well, the utilities just want to make money. They just want to deliver power. But this RF and digital stuff is a far cry from 60 hertz. And all these interference issues clearly are going to undercut any profitability that they might have. I know right now we have 300 open power line cases across the country. We've been getting FCC involvement in an awful lot of these. And so... some of these conventional power line sources have solutions. Well, what do you do from BPL? What do you do if you have interference? You are intentionally putting the same signals on power line noise that are causing hams to report power line interference. So the utilities just want to learn what they can about this. Now, there's a number of things they should ask the manufacturers. How do you deal with interference issues? What solutions do you have if the notching is not good enough in a few cases? Now, we're not looking to have BPL be designed that it could never possibly interfere with anything ever. I don't want rules that place that requirement on my own station. I don't want every ham to have 120 dB of filtering because they might cause TVI. We want good designs that generally protect amateur radio so there will be a small enough number of problems that it's possible and practical to correct those on a case-by-case basis. What does the BPL manufacturer consider to be legitimate interference? One of the problems we've seen is, well, yeah, that's not interference, but we've corrected all legitimate complaints. Well, what's a legitimate complaint? A ham goes mobile and operates somewhere. No, they should be making sure the product will be certificated under the new rules. And when they talk about notching and they talk about protection, the answers don't include amateur radio and include cooperation with amateur radio. Expect interference complaints. Now, one of the most important questions that utilities should ask BPL manufacturers is just simply, what do you think about Ed? Because if you go to one of these BPL manufacturers and just say Ed, they know who it is. I've been that much working closely with them in some cases, working closely against them in others if needed to protect amateur radio.
Ed Hare, W1RFI, excerpted from his talk he gave on broadband over power lines at the 2006 Dayton Hamvention last month in suburban Dayton, Ohio. Part one of Ed's talk can be found on the archive page at our new website, therainreport.com. Just a thank you to Chris Peterson, KG0BP. Oh, that's me, for being the catalyst for getting therainreport.com up and running. You should be able to download this file or simply listen to it, if all works as it should, from therainreport.com. We'll be doing some tweaking over the next few weeks, including making these programs available as a podcast. You should be able to register for that right now. Now, for Rain's founder, producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Chris Peterson, KG0BP, bidding you 73 from all of us here at Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network. The Rain Report is copyright 1990 through 2006, Rain, all rights reserved.